It's our Week 14 NFL review and an Eagles-Chargers Monday night preview. Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Shots and Tenier NFL podcast for Monday, December 8th, 2025. I'm Aaron Schatz. You know me as the DVOA guy from FTN Fantasy, and he is Mike Tenier. You know him from his Substack at miketenier.substack.com. We're going to be talking about dominance in the NFC. We're going to be talking about big changes in the AFC playoff race. We're going to be talking about Monday Night Football. Before we get to all that, of course, we take your questions if you're watching us live on YouTube. If you want to get a free month of the FTN GOAT subscription, we have great news because we have worked with our friends at Underdog to hook you up. For a limited time, when you sign up on Underdog with our link or code FTN, play your first $5. You will get $100 in bonus bets plus a free month of FTN GOAT on us. There is no better way to get access to all the DVOA numbers, including all those charting splits, plus our award-winning fantasy projections and betting tools and DFS Optimizer and so much more. Remember, sign up on Underdog, play your first $5, and our marketing team will be on the lookout to hook you up with a code for your free month of the FTN GOAT subscription. Promo code FTN on Underdog. Terms apply. So let's start by talking about the changes in the AFC playoff race, because there were a couple of really big events yesterday in the AFC. And I'm not talking about the Ravens-Steelers game, because that's interesting and somebody has to win that division. And, you know, the Ravens might win the second one in a couple of weeks, but they lost at home. And I'm more talking about, first of all, the Daniel Jones injury. And second of all, the Chiefs losing again.
I thought you were going to say, and second of all, the Daniel Jones injury.
The Daniel Jones injury, I mean, we already knew that the Colts offense was declining over the last few weeks, and it led to this very interesting sort of internal debate in my brain about just how many weeks matters.
Right?
Because I tend to look much more longer term, and longer term, the Chiefs offense still rated well, but the last 4 weeks they had struggled. Now they're screwed.
Yes.
Riley Leonard is a sixth-round pick.
Right.
The alternative is Brett Rypien.
Right.
Rear passing DVOA of minus 50%. And people were, like, suggesting yesterday, like, Phillip Rivers and Ryan Tannehill coming out of retirement. It's not going to happen. It's Riley Leonard. Riley Leonard is the guy.
Right. That wouldn't be out of character, by the way, for the Colts to do something wacky like that, but Phillip Rivers is like 46 now.
All you have to do is stuff the box on Jonathan Taylor now for the rest of the season. Just stuff. Now, all he's going to see is stacked boxes for the rest of the year.
I was stunned to open up FTN Fantasy and look at the playoff odds and find them at 31.4%. But that's simply the ballast that the Colts have at this point.
It's sort of it was hard to figure out just how much I should dock them.
Right.
Because on average, the drop from a starting quarterback to a backup quarterback is about 14 percentage points of DVOA.
But
because the Colts had already been declining, I docked them 25%.
Okay.
But that still gives them 31% playoff odds because they've you know, got some wins.
I look at this more of a going down to the third stringer automatically, because Anthony Richardson in my mind would have been the second stringer who would have started the season.
I suppose that's true, although Richardson was so bad.
Richardson was so bad, but if he was running out there, you'd be like, oh, they're going to get a win with scrambling and bombs. They're going to get
Yeah, that's true. Right. I did run playoff odds. I'll just get to this now rather than saving them for the Monday night preview.
Okay.
In the AFC, let's assume we got the Patriots and Bills in, the Broncos and Jaguars in, and the AFC North winner in. That leaves us with two spots. The Texans are probably in. It's really just for the last spot. If the Chargers win tonight, Texans 91, Chargers 73, Colts 26, Chiefs 13.
That's what I was thinking. Like, this game tonight is huge for the Chiefs.
If the Eagles win tonight, Texans 92.
Okay.
Chargers only 46. Colts 36, Chiefs 25.
Who was the 46?
The Chargers.
The Chargers, right.
So they're still the leader for the seventh spot if they lose tonight. But it's a big difference between 73 and 46%.
Yeah, if the Chargers win, they are in such good position for that second playoff spot. And the Texans have a lot of tiebreakers in their back pocket right now. They've got a sweep of the Jaguars. They've got this win against the Chiefs. So that's why they're hovering in the 90s. It's more of a knockout round for do the Chargers kind of like cut the bottom out of what the Chiefs and Colts do, or do the Eagles get the win and then they're in the soup with these three teams?
It's hard to still explain to people that the Chiefs are still a good team that has had some just everything go wrong for them in when the chips are down this year, but they are not one of the best teams to ever miss the playoffs.
Okay.
They wouldn't be in the top 25 of best teams to miss the playoffs. Their DVOA is on the way down.
Right.
They have not been as good over the last few weeks.
Right.
And my God, their offensive line is torn to pieces, although it was the Texans' offensive line that couldn't block at all.
Right, but that's life for the Texans. That's how they operate. That's how they go through their days.
Chris Collinsworth said at one point, you know, the problem with this game is all the people who got the Chiefs here through all those winning seasons all seem to have failed at the same time. Kelsey. And the answer is that's not true because Spags called a good game.
Right.
And Chris Jones was awesome. So not everybody who got the Chiefs here failed at the same time. Just
McDuffie's been playing well. I didn't think
McDuffie got hurt. McDuffie was out most of the game. Yeah.
Okay, well, that was part of it there. You lose these guys in the offensive line. Trey Smith is not there. Basically, what he's saying is Rice dropped and had that
pass defensed on that fourth. What did you think of the decision to go for it? This is very controversial.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth and one on their own 31 with 10:22 left, which ended up with the Stingley pass defensed on Rashee Rice. It was more like a yard and a half.
Yes.
The models said go.
Yes.
I thought it was more of a toss-up because it was a yard and a half rather than a yard and because of how well the Texans' defense was playing on that day.
Right.
But a toss-up, as I pointed out on Blue Sky, a toss-up still means that going forward is fine.
Yes.
Toss-up means toss-up.
Right. It means it's a coin flip. Whatever you do is a coin flip. I thought, well, we have it's Patrick Mahomes. You go for it on fourth and one in this circumstance. That's fine. The pass play, the design, you know, I've watched the Chiefs for years do, and they don't have Noah Gray right now, do like a tight end play or a T formation or some rollout where it rolls the corner and you know, Kelsey or somebody's out there to catch a 1.5 yard pass. Dropping in the pocket and throwing to the guy Stingley covering, that seems a little odd, but
Matthew Carley says, how do you end up throwing at Stingley? The answer is because Rashee Rice is your man beater and you're actually throwing to Rashee Rice no matter who's on him.
Right. And your other alternative is Lassiter. There's not a lot of good alternatives out there.
Hitchhiker's Pie says, I think Kelsey was being asked to make a very hard catch, spinning around against the direction of his movement. Not exactly a routine catch. One of the drops was a total drop. The other one was this.
I think the first one was a drop.
Yeah, and this is the interception was a tougher catch.
And that's an example of when you're living and dying with Mahomes is going to scramble around, escape from trouble, and make some kind of off-schedule, off-platform throw, you're not going to get 100% with that. You're not even with Mahomes, you're not getting 90% of that. When that's like the entire offense, you're going to have problems like what we saw.
I'm also going to point out, if you go for that first and fourth and one and you fail, there's a good chance that you stop the Texans, given how the Texans are playing, and you force a field goal.
Right.
And then you get the ball back and there's 7 or 8 minutes left.
Right.
Even if you allow a touchdown, you do get the ball back. The problem is that on the next drive, the Chiefs went 4 and out, and on the drive after that, they threw an interception.
Right. I mean, the play would have been, well, if you punt, you know, then it's like, well, maybe you get the sack, the turnover that you're looking for in that game. I can't look at that game and say, boy, that fourth and one was the call. They outplayed.
So the Chiefs still have a shot, and they've got a couple of gimme games in the next couple of weeks. I think they have the Titans and the Raiders are two of their opponents. Right. It'll be a bummer for the NFL if they lose to the Chargers and we get to Christmas and the Christmas night game doesn't mean anything.
What's the Christmas night game? Chiefs?
Broncos, Chiefs. It may only mean something for the Broncos. This is kind of a shock.
Oh, well. Oh, well.
I think you said in Two Deep Zone today that the Texans could win it. And I think the Texans could win. Like, that offense is a nightmare. That offensive line is a nightmare. But Stroud is still good, and Nico Collins is still good. And that defense is fantastic. And the AFC is wide open.
Yes.
You know, especially if you believe in DVOA, that the Patriots are and Broncos, too, are not as good as their record.
Right, right.
And so the AFC is wide open, and the Texans could absolutely do it.
Absolutely do it, because you can see their path. They go in there, defense. If you can't protect your quarterback, you're probably in deep trouble against that Texans team.
Someone said you could totally see it as 7th seed Texans at 5th seed Bills in the AFC Championship game.
Yes. You could absolutely.
That's definitely a possibility.
Right.
Operatic says the image of Kelce sitting on the bench after his drop, staring into the abyss, was fairly haunting. I'm guessing they don't renew him for next year. Yeah, the Kelce has been actually very good this year.
Yes, yes.
After looking like he was toast until this game.
Right. But if you miss the playoffs, or even if you like crawl in with the 7th seed,
he's gonna retire.
He'll retire. They want to get that salary off the books. I think they'll make some decision about the Chris Jones salary because he's getting older. He kind of has not been the happiest camper recently. And you create a sort of a soft reboot situation because that's the time to do it. That's the time when you might be able to spend a little money, use your draft pick that's in the middle to get a high-impact player.
Now, the funny thing about all this discussion of the AFC is that if you believe DVOA, the NFC is going to win the Super Bowl.
Well, I mean, yeah, if you watch the games, too.
Because DVOA loves the Rams and Seahawks. Now, the Rams and Seahawks are 1 and 2 in the market Super Bowl odds, but not as much as DVOA loves them. And because I have the Rams and Seahawks now among the top teams ever, we have the NFC winning the Super Bowl 2/3 of the time.
I was on Vancouver radio, so the Seattle market this morning, as I often am, I've been for years. They are so pessimistic about the Seahawks.
It's because of Darnold.
It's because of Darnold, but I said to them, you won the last two games by a combined score of, I think, 64-9, 63-9. Yeah. I was like, congratulations on your graduation to Eagles fans, Seahawks fans. And yeah, it's because of Darnold, because the first half of that game against the Falcons was a dreary mess, and it was a 6-6 at halftime. But, I was like, I don't know what to tell you. We've all seen Darnold. We know it. You're slaughtering opponents.
Yes. Slaughtering opponents. I realize it's weird that this is the third straight year that I've been talking about teams being among the quote-unquote best ever. Uh-huh. And in DVOA, like before 2023, we didn't have any of those teams. This is not like every year this happens. It's just weird that the last 3 years it's happened, and the last two they didn't win the Super Bowl. We'll see what happens this year with the Rams and Seahawks. The Seahawks are number one, but only by a slight amount, and the Rams are number one if you in weighted DVOA. So it's the Rams and Seahawks neck and neck.
Both of them, it was just absolute wheelbarrow games yesterday. And they've got the Rams got the Lions this week.
Yes.
Right. Whereas the Seahawks get the Colts with Riley Leonard in Seattle.
Yes. Let's talk about Packers and Bears. It was interesting to read. People were very excited about Caleb Williams during that game, in part because of his ability to scramble to the right and make amazing looking schoolyard plays. And in your column this morning, you basically criticized him for constantly scrambling to the right and making schoolyard plays.
Right.
I think that's probably because those schoolyard plays are very high variance.
They're extremely high variance. And his percentage on them is not that good. You get it. And it's like, wowza, wowza. And then you realize there's been three or four of them. And the completion rate. For a guy who throws a lot of short yak balls, Williams's completion rate is very low. You see a lot of off-target passes, and then you see those scramble right passes. And there's a great deal of rationale. And he's better than last year, no question. Very much a rationale of the Bears are better, and therefore Williams is good. And it's more like the Bears are better because they're running the ball down people's throats, face a soft schedule, and Williams is not a disaster anymore.
The first half of the game, I didn't think they were running very well. Mm-mm. I was like, they're not running. We thought they were going to run all over the Packers, and it's not happening. And then the second half of the game, it started happening a lot more.
Right, right. That was 5 yards, 6 yards, 5 yards, 4 yards, 6 yards. And they were just going down the field, and the Packers seemed unable to stop it. And then you do get what works extremely well, play action shot over the top, play action roll out. So all these things that are built right off of that running game, then you're getting Williams into that kind of structure, and he's making the throws. And I wrote about it with that running game. It's like, I saw what happened against the Eagles. I saw what's happened in the second half of that game. Beginning of the season, they were not running the ball either. And
First couple of weeks, the running game was not good. And it's not like they're big name. People are excited about Monongai, I guess. Monongai's a seventh round pick.
He's a fantasy guy. He's your basic fantasy running back. Swift is doing better now than he was earlier in the year. He's a guy who runs hot and cold. And you look at the offensive linemen, and it's like, no, it's not like Quentin Nelson and Penei Sewell and all these other guys. There are a lot of just veterans out there who are playing well right now. And, you know, I don't think that's something that's going to be sustained at these guys are now the Lions or last year's Eagles level. I don't think that's sustainable down the stretch.
As far as the Packers go, I mean, they're the Packers. They're inconsistent, but Love has his weapons now. He's got Jaden Reed back. He's got Christian Watson. He's got everything except Tucker Kraft.
Right, right.
And they're better than the Bears. Mm-hmm. And they're dangerous, but they're not clearly, I think clearly, not as good as the Seahawks or Rams.
Right. It's like the Seahawks and the Rams right now are so good in so many aspects of the game and have like a little soft patch of schedule they've gone through. Like, it's almost like hard to criticize them except Darnold. And then you get the Packers, who are in the same ballpark with the Eagles. And I guess the Lions are in that place and the Buccaneers are in that place where it's like you see the flaws for these teams, and yet they have the portfolio of a deep playoff team.
Also, as you pointed out, next week the Bears play the Browns while the Packers play the Broncos.
Yes.
So there is a good chance that when these two teams meet again in week 16, yes, the Bears will be back in first place.
That's right. And it's in Denver, the Broncos game. And that's a team that's going to punish you if you plan to go out there and be inconsistent and rely on big plays. I guess you'll get the Riley Moss pass interferences. That's how you get your big plays there. And you talk about a bad game on Christmas night. There's going to be a Saturday night showdown between the Bears and
yes, that is a Saturday night game, I believe.
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
Let's talk about reverse post-game win expectancy. The only reverse post-game win expectancy of this week is kind of a shocker.
Can I try to guess?
Sure.
Hold on. Let me look. Okay, you said it's kind of a shocker, so it's not Ravens Steelers.
Nope.
Okay. I'm not going to have dead air here. Saints Bucks?
Bills Bengals.
Okay.
And the main reason is penalties, because the Bills had 68 yards of penalties. And the Bengals had only 30.
Huh.
Otherwise, it sees the two teams as being basically equal, which kind of makes sense because a lot of that game was about turnovers and turnover returns.
Yep.
And like no one standing in front of Christian Benford. And I will say there was a little bit of Josh Allen hagiography. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that word correctly.
There's two ways.
Because of them winning that game. He played very well yesterday, but Christian Benford had a pick six. Like, right, the game turned on a pick six by Christian Benford, which is nothing Josh Allen did.
Right. And then a second turnover on the very next play by A.J. Epinesa with somebody else tipping the ball at the line. Allen played well, and there were a couple of the big splash plays, including that big touchdown that made a difference. It was chaos ball. That was a great game.
Fun. That was a lot of fun.
It was. But that was chaos ball in the snow. So you tell me, it was 50-50 post-game winning expectancy. Of course it was. So it was like a
two-point. Titans-Browns was close. Titans 54%.
Not a fun rewatch.
Mark Andrews had a good game.
Yeah, he played well enough.
J.J. McCarthy had a good game, too. It doesn't make them good quarterbacks.
Right. You're playing the last-place team. You may have a couple good throws, a couple bad throws. They lost because of a punt block. They lost because of a fumble. They lost because of that two-point conversion. They lost because they're the Browns, but they also almost won because they were facing the Titans. So
The Browns are now the sixth worst special teams through 13 games. And that does not include the 2-point conversion.
I'm sorry.
The flip of this is the amazing stuff that I put out on both Blue Sky and Twitter and Threads, all three this morning, about the Jets.
The Jets.
The Jets are now the best special teams ever through 13 games. The only special teams unit with a higher rating is the 87 Saints, who only played 12 games because I don't count the strike breaker game.
Right. I can only imagine the special teams in those games.
Oh, those are, I mean, they're actually awful. because nobody could hit a field goal. But the Jets also had their worst offensive game ever by DVOA.
Brady Cook.
Yeah, part of it is because Miami's defense is not good.
Right.
And you adjust, you know, adjusting for that. But Brady Cook was very bad.
Very bad. Tyrod Taylor was not good when he played. And I guess I lost track of the fact that Justin Fields got injured.
Was not active.
Got injured during the week. He popped up on the injury report.
So if you're listening to this and you haven't yet, check my feed on all your social media for incredible Jets tables.
Just imagine the worst Jets performance ever. Think about that. Jets performance ever.
Although it's only since 1978, because as I pointed out, there's a game in 1976 where Namath and one other, I can't remember who the other guy is, combined to go 7-for-28 with 6 interceptions and like 9 fumbles.
That sounds amazing. Namath must have had like both of his knees wrapped in the garter belts of the women he was with the night before. And it was maybe Mack Robinson or something.
There are some incredible Jets offensive games in 76. Yeah. Richard Todd is the other. The big dog points out Richard Todd.
Richard Todd. He would, if he was around, he would come and punch us for suggesting this, but man, he had some games.
Let's do the weighted DVOA top 13 today. Ooh. Cause I wanted to make sure people did hear the Patriots at 13. Because people are wondering, where do you have the Patriots? Why are they so low, et cetera? Right. Okay. Patriots 13. Eagles 12.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Bills 11.
Got to be climbing a little bit, though.
Dropping a little bit because they had the best games early in the season.
Okay. Okay.
49ers at 10.
Hanging tough.
Down 3 spots at 9, your Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, sure.
Up 3 spots at 8. Your Jacksonville Jaguars.
They played well. They took care. They've been taking care of business for weeks. I have to stop making fun of the
of the agita that I have about my preseason Washington predictions. I also had Jacksonville winning the division.
There you go.
And that looks pretty good.
Right.
Houston 7.
Sounds right.
Denver 6.
That sounds right for them.
Green Bay 5.
These are starting to make a lot of sense.
Colts 4, but not really 4.
They stopped making sense for a moment, but we know.
We know that's without considering the quarterback thing.
Yes, yes.
Detroit 3.
Sure.
Good one. Seattle 2, down a spot. And the Rams 1, and the Rams and Seattle are basically tied.
Nice. Nice.
Let's talk about Monday Night Football, which is a huge one. It's the 8-4 Eagles at the 8-4 Chargers. Now, here's something interesting. It doesn't really affect the Eagles' playoffs at all.
Yeah.
If the Eagles lose this game because of the Cowboys losing this week, the Eagles still make the playoffs 92% of the time if they lose this game.
Right.
And if they win this game, they only get the one seed 6.5% of the time. They are going to be somewhere between 2-4.
2-4.
Probably no matter what.
No matter what. Have you factored in, though, that if the Eagles lose this game, I will not be able to leave my house for 3 days?
How's the bunny?
The bunny situation is out of control. I'm not gonna steal my buddy's joke from Sunday, but like, there's a lot of anti-bunny rhetoric here in Philly. I'm gonna tell you, if the Eagles lose and like they lose out and like say they crawl into the playoffs and lose to like the, I don't know, the worst wild card team you could imagine, I'm going to be hearing about that bunny on my deathbed.
Let's say they crawl to the playoffs and they lose to the Bears.
I am going 30 years from now, old men will be like, 2025 Eagles, not damn bunny. This is one of those things that's going to live in infamy if it fails.
Can you explain the bunny for people who don't understand the bunny references?
The offensive lineman installed an inflatable bunny, a giant bunny that they called the positivity bunny, in the locker room. And I haven't been able to ascertain if this was meant to be serious or tongue-in-cheek or actively trolling the negativity in the media. If Jason Kelce had done it, we would have all gotten the joke, I think. But because it's Mulata and those guys doing it. So instead of a pool table or air hockey table, there's an inflatable like Easter bunny in the locker room. It is like the most non-Philly fan thing you could possibly think of.
Now, stat-wise, the interesting thing is that this game could be a get-right game for both running games. Eagles' running game is much worse ranked than their passing game, but the Chargers' run defense is 23rd.
Surprising.
And the strength of the Chargers' run defense is up the middle, but the Eagles are stronger running to the outside.
Yes.
They should be running to the outside.
And don't worry, folks. Nick Sirianni has been doing more game planning this week, so maybe they realize that they're better running to the outside.
On the other side, the Eagles' run defense is 18th compared to their pass defense, which is 7th. And the Chargers' running game is only 22nd, but guess who's back? Omarion Hampton.
Guess who's not back? Jalen Carter. He's out this week.
So the Chargers, however, it's interesting, the Chargers are best running outside, which is actually where the Eagles' run defense is best.
Right.
As well.
They can flow to the ball. That gives you Bond. That gives you Dijon on the edge.
Receiving also has some really weird stats. The receivers, as you probably know this, number two, the Eagles are number two against number one wide receivers.
Yes.
30th against number two.
Right. The Ringo
and
factor.
Fifth against other wide receivers. Read that as Cooper Dijon.
Right.
So the question then is, who is being covered by Adoree Jackson? And it's probably, I'm guessing, Keenan Allen.
Probably. They move Allen into the slot a lot.
Quentin Johnston is probably going to play despite a shoulder injury. He's limited with a shoulder injury, but he's probably going to play.
Yeah, a limited Quentin Johnston is kind of easier. It's not necessarily a thing where they put speed on speed, size on size, so it's hard to determine what will happen. It could be a by-sides thing, too. Fangio will sometimes do that. The best way the Eagles can protect their number two cornerback is to sack.
Ollie Connolly told me that the Eagles are now doing something that's very rare in the NFL but very common in college, which is that they use Slay on the boundary side.
Not Slay, Mitchell.
Mitchell on the boundary. Slay is sitting at home now. Mitchell on the boundary side and Dijon on the field side. Normally in the NFL, they don't separate. Usually in the NFL, you get left and right because the hash marks are different than college. But the Eagles are doing it. Boundary and field, which if you want to watch for that tonight, that's very interesting.
I will, because that's so unintuitive at the NFL level. But yes, because the guy covering the field side has got like all this space out there to worry about.
Whereas if you know how to use the sideline as your friend and you're on the boundary side, you're right there by the sideline using it as your friend.
You can hide your number two cornerback usually on that side.
But they're not. That's where they're using Mitchell, apparently.
Interesting.
He's good at using the sideline.
Okay.
The Chargers are the best defense in the league against deep passes, and the Eagles are the best defense in the league against short passes.
Interesting. And that's bad news for the Eagles, who are usually at their best on offense, getting a couple deep shots. So that's pretty much is their offense.
But the Chargers are also weak up the middle, and we know Hurts doesn't throw up the middle as much as other quarterbacks, but he has been very good on those this year.
Right. He is better this year at that. Again, it's another thing that maybe they spotted in the game plan this week.
Here's another one, stats interesting. The Chargers are primarily a zone and two high team.
Okay.
And Hurts is better against man and one high. So this plays to the weakness of Hurts.
Interesting.
And the Eagles are the exact opposite. The Eagles are primarily a man and one high team.
Mm-hmm.
And Herbert has been disappointing against everything.
Well, because he's been pressured about 85% of his dropbacks, too.
Yes. Yeah. Every time you look at Herbert numbers for every split, you're like, this is the guy that everyone thinks is the greatest quarterback in the world. And part of the problem is he doesn't have necessarily great receivers. And part of the problem is he's been hurried and that they have no offensive tackles now. And, right. and it's not Herbert's fault, but
right.
that's where it is. So the line is Eagles minus two.
Mm-hmm.
And I know about all, I know how Eagles fans feel. And I know how the Eagles have played in the last, I feel they're the better team.
Right. They're the better team. They're the better team. If I'm not sitting here being a fatalist who like hears nonstop negativity as a neutral team, this is an Eagles win.
It should be. I mean, even in Los Angeles, I mean, you know,
well,
yeah. we can debate about what home field, what causes home field advantage and whether there is one in Los Angeles for the Chargers. But mm-hmm. yeah, I feel like the Eagles should be favored. It's not like, oh, the Eagles will win easily. It's a 2-point line, but. I mean, I think that the Eagles are more likely to win this game,
right?
Even though the Chargers need it more.
I absolutely agree with you. And that's leaving the fatalism aside, objectively, rationally, agree with you.
All right. That does it for today's show. Thank you, everybody, for watching and listening. And please like and review the show. And, of course, tell your friends to watch our show live on the YouTube or the Twitter or wherever we broadcast this thing, and listen to it on all your favorite podcast apps. And of course, subscribe to Mike's site, miketenier.substack.com and FTN as well. All right. So that does it for today. We will be back Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern to preview week 15. Until then, everybody enjoy Monday Night Football, even Eagles fans and even rabbits. Talk to you on Thursday.
West Coast.